Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, Ilona Europa, Accent on LA Talk Radio, Monday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific Time, and I know whole world is listening. Better be like that. Anyway, but some days are very special. Some days are more special than others. Some guests are just great. Some guests are a little boring. Some guests are just amazing, and this is one of those days that I am so excited. Not only because our guest is Sagittarius, and I think I can speak a lot. Even when people don't understand me, I don't care, I still talk. But you know what? I know these personalities, and I think we'll have really, really cool show because the energy will be really, really right for that. Then, before I really introduce the guest, I think maybe we'll play some music and then we'll be talking about what was the song about. Okay. Yo.
Yeah. other side. Yeah, you really got me now. You got me so I can't sleep at night. Oh yeah, you really got me now.
Oh my gosh, what an energy in the song.
Oingo, boingo.
Wow, now we have introduction. We have with us in the studio Mike Gormley, and he has his segment on Electric Radio, Accent On. It's called Segment on Mike Gormley. And Mike is bringing amazing guests to our studio. And today, okay, you do introduction.
Today is a guy named Richard Gibbs, who you just heard on that song play trombone. Voice box, was it called?
Private Five synthesizer through
Keyboards.
A voice box.
Yeah, and other strange things. That was Boingo at it.
It was like 1980s?
Oh, 81,
maybe, yeah. When it came out, yeah, 1980.
Well, Richard Gibbs was in Oingo Boingo for a while. He also played with Robert Palmer. He also played with Aretha Franklin and a few other minor artists. He's a film TV composer, including The Simpsons and Queen of the Damned and a lot of other great scores. Record producer for, you did Korn's MTV Unplugged.
I did.
Yeah. And somebody we're going to hear later called Purple Mountains Majesties. That's a new band. And he owns a studio called The Woodshed out in Malibu that people like Barbra Streisand and U2 and Coldplay drop in and perform and play and record. And
that was fast forward your life so fast. You know.
Yeah, I think I'm done here. I can go home now.
Bye,
right?
Bye. Oh,
you covered it all. We're over.
Okay, that's crazy because, of course, Mike, you're right. You both know each other for many, many years. And that's what is amazing, because we'll be having some personal stories probably that you both will be sharing with us. But this is the truth. We have very, very special guest today. This is like name that, again, let's repeat our
His
guest name.
You want to know who he is?
Yes.
A guy named Richard Gibbs.
Then,
Richard, if you know him well enough, you can call him Ribs.
No.
Oh, no. Okay, Richard. I like Rich. How people call you? Yes.
How do they call me?
Yeah.
Usually outside of a car window as they're going by.
Hi, Richard, yes.
Just
Richard. Okay, then we'll call you Richard. But yes, your bio, your achievements are beyond anybody's imagination. I think people must love you or hate you because you're a lucky one.
Why would anybody hate me?
People are jealous. We are in the music business, film music business. Everybody's jealous of something.
No, I don't think anybody wants my career. It's been too weird.
Oh, I want your career.
No, of course.
I would. No, you know what? This is a tough business, and everybody looks at this business like, oh, he's so lucky. He made it. How he did this. Oh, must be something.
I have always been lucky. But there is a, there's that story that, was it luck favors the prepared or something like that?
Which means I don't know. I've never prepared enough.
See, then you weren't lucky, were you?
Mike, you are a lucky one too. You know, and we learn more and more about you. Then you really have a great life that you are sharing us with, you know, your life stories. But you both know each other for many, many years. And really, that's why Richard is here.
That's how weird it is. We actually like each other.
No, that's
that doesn't happen in rock and roll, that a manager and an artist, even years after they haven't worked together, we're still friends. Even when I left Boingo, we remained friends.
There's something special about you. And again, maybe this is a Sagittarius sign because you are friendly. Or you are just the easygoing guy. Because Mike seems like very easy too, but being a manager, you cannot be easy all the time, especially an artist.
He is. He's always been easygoing.
Really?
Even when he's like demanding lots of money, he's very nice about it.
I like that. Okay, how both of you met, please?
Boingo.
Boingo, Boingo. I was leaving. What is an interview? Are you interviewing me now, Richard?
If you wish, I'd be happy to do it.
Just give me the
How did you meet me, Mike?
I was leaving A&M Records, and Oingo Boingo needed a manager, and my partner then became Miles Copeland, and we managed Oingo Boingo.
You mean your partner wasn't Miles Copeland before, but he became Miles Copeland?
No, he became Miles Copeland after we met. His name was Ralph Morphin.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's inside story. I like that. Nobody knows this, maybe.
There's a great story about Miles that Stan Ridgway used to tell.
Yeah.
Stan Ridgway, for those of you who weren't around in the 80s, he's still around and kicking and doing great, but he was the singer in a band called Wall of Voodoo, was best known for the song Mexican Radio.
Yeah.
Oh, such a good delivery. Stan's the man. The best storyteller in rock and roll, I think.
Yeah.
And he was over at my house hanging out one day, and he said, I can never figure out why Miles keeps me around. You know, he had that weird way of talking, lovely speaking voice. And he said, and finally one day I figured it out. I'm his sense of humor.
And that's cute. That means like 1980s, Oingo Boingo. How many years you both were working together?
Well, I quit the band.
Oh, that's right after when you met Mike? You said,
No. Yeah, I quit. I met Mike and said, done. I joined the band before Mike came on the scene, but not that long before. I joined the band in 1980, and I quit in 1984 when our son, my wife's son and I was born. Our first son was born. I didn't want to tour anymore.
Oh, how sweet. No, you're sweet,
well,
man.
Well, it was easy, just before you get all like gooey on me, it was easy because I was always making more money outside of the band than I was within the band.
Lucky one. Okay, we're coming back. No,
that's not luck. That's hard work.
Studio musician?
I was a studio player, yeah. And being in Boingo fed that. I was already a studio musician when I joined Boingo, but being in Boingo became my calling card because right at the time when Boingo came on the scene in the 80s, Boingo pre-existed me being in the band by many years, but when Boingo kind of arrived on the radio and so on, I think I need to put my pop filter back on.
Popping.
When Boingo arrived on the scene, that was at the beginning of this burgeoning new wave, you know, movement with The Police and Devo and all these other bands, and suddenly all the pop acts that and rock bands that were before were feeling like they were getting left in the dust, and they wanted some of that street cred, they wanted some of that sound, and so they wanted to get players that knew how to do that, which really wasn't anything difficult to know how to do, but I was uniquely positioned because I was already a session player.
Okay.
And I had two-color hair, and I showed up with all these synthesizers, but I could sight-read music and, you know, classically trained, so I could do sessions, and I was like a safe bet for them to give them and they would just throw tracks in front of me and said, I don't know, make it sound like something you would do.
Wow.
And I got a lot of work from that alone.
Wonderful. Okay. Mike, I'm sure you have a leading question, but I'm a woman, and having successful musician who is touring and having good time with band, having a baby, and you are still with your wonderful wife, which I had the pleasure to meet in the studio, and you have your first son, and you decided really to settle down in a way because you knew that maybe you make more money and future is there in a studio as a musician, but still, you decided to raise your family and being close to family.
Again, I want to take the halo off for a second.
Okay,
here.
Wife, where is wife? She can talk.
Definitely. There's a reason she's on here because she would clear everything up very quickly. No, it was easy. Yes, it's true. I wanted to spend more time. I wanted to be around. I wanted to see our son become, you know, a human being, going from an embryo to a human. And his name is Keegan, and he's more famous than I am, certainly in
filmmaker
in Malibu. He is. And when it wasn't like there's this image of, oh, the rock and roll star settling down. That sounds like what might be what you're painting. Yeah. But Mike will testify to this. Oingo Boingo was not exactly a chick magnet band.
It's true. The way how
it was so weird. You would go on the road and you'd hear about bands. I've been on the road with, for example, Rod Stewart, where there were parties every night. Yeah. You go on the road with the Oingo Boingo, and the decision of what movie you wanted to watch was the big deal after the show.
And there'd be fights over that.
Yeah, there'd be,
And we'd go out to eat at Denny's. And the backstage scene after the show, our show. Now, I've been on the road with other bands. I've been on the road with Korn. I know what that is. But with Boingo, it was the backstage guests were a bunch of guys with, pocket protectors and pens and horn rim glasses. Like, you guys are so awesome. It's like, oh my God, can we leave now? So it was, it wasn't like I was settling down from some wild party scene at all. Okay. Not that I was into that anyway.
Wonderful.
But
we like this type of man in our studio who also has this great memory of not being crazy rock star, because you don't need to be crazy rock star to be great musician. And
let's be fair, it just wasn't presented to me.
I'm out of this topic.
No, I don't think I would have been anyway. But
okay, that's what I'm saying.
And this band was kind of the definition. I don't know if people use this term anymore, of a straight edge band.
Wonderful.
For the most part, I mean, I would say Sam and Carrie, maybe not so much.
But, that was 1980s. We're having listeners, and we have people know this show. We have a lot of musicians. And I am putting accent on that, because if you have great artists who try to become something big, they can also be normal, great, straight, clean. They can make it,
I didn't say anything about being normal or straight or clean. I didn't say any of those words.
You don't drink coffee.
I've never tasted coffee.
What about alcohol?
No, I'll have a glass of wine or a beer
smoking
once in a while. I've never tried a cigarette.
And you have a liking swimming and all this sea
surfing
stuff, surfing.
Surfing, yeah, I'm a surfer, yeah.
You're a surfer. This is a lifestyle that we maybe later will be talking about, because you are in Malibu. I saw your beautiful house. I saw your studio. You have the calm sound when you enter your house. Something is there, peaceful.
And the washing machine must have been on. I don't know.
And you're funny. But, it's refreshing. I will say it's refreshing, because there was 80s. There was a little crazy time in 70s. There were crazy rock and stuff like that. And everybody talks drugs, alcohol, and partying. But
I want to dispel that, because it's such
he wants to be a rocker.
It's such a stereotype of musicians of being drug-addled idiots. And there are those drug-addled idiots. We can all name them. But
most weren't, actually.
Most weren't, and especially at the pro level. The guys that were my friends, the session players, the guys who were going
hardworking
and working
musicians.
9, 12 hours a day doing this, some of them, they went through their drug phase, but most did not. The ones who survived either stopped it or never did do it.
Listen, people, that was a very nice, strong line.
Especially those guys weren't going to get hired again if they were screwed up.
That's right.
I mean, it would take one time to come into a gig and be messed up, and they wouldn't get asked back.
That's right. Absolutely.
Wonderful. This line, Mike, was perfect, too, for people to remember. Okay, I put my accent on great, great characters of people who are working hard, and they are successful. And now we need to learn what's happened after 1984. When you left Oingo Boingo?
1985.
Five already. Okay, one more there. Okay. What's happened?
Well, I quit simply because I was already covered, and I was already making more money as a session player outside of the band. And I love being a session player. It was really a lot of fun. My training is as a classical composer. That's my degree, is a classical composition.
From Berklee College of Music.
Berklee College of Music, as we used to say back in the day, Berklee Pool of Mucus. It used to be called Berklee School of Music. Anyway.
All right.
So Berklee, I had my training there. I did study film scoring there, but I thought film scoring was something I would do when I was in my 50s. But as a session player, I started playing on film scoring dates. And I go, phone call for me already?
it's my daughter, but she knows better.
The film scoring dates were you know, those were really entertaining for me to sit there in a room with an orchestra and look up at, you know, there'd be 80 people in the room and the room would be all lit up and we're all learning the parts and flying through it. You could not. It was a higher wire act the whole time when you're scoring a movie as a player. Everybody, you had to be able to do first take. You had to be able to play it right the first time. And I'm dealing with, you know, 8-10 keyboards around me and sequencers and all this other stuff. And the lights are on and we're all like frantically getting ready to do this. And then they can, okay, let's go. Let's take. And it was this magic moment that would happen on a scoring stage. It's done differently now. The technology has affected it. But they would project the film, usually a black and white work print, and it would be on a huge screen, the size of a big theater, against the back of the studio.
Wow.
And they would, the conductor said, okay, let's start. The red light would go on over the conductor's head, this flashing, rotating red light. The screen would go on, and the lights in the studio would turn off. There would be a guy, a stagehand, would turn one of those Frankenstein power things, go, boom, turn off all the lights in the studio, and all you could see was the screen. There'd be a little light on the conductor's face, so you could, and you could see his baton.
Oh my gosh.
And we'd have lights on the stand so we could see our music. It was magical.
Magical.
And that was when I fell in love with film scoring. The first film score, first couple of film scores I worked on were for, as a player and programmer, were for a guy named Craig Safin, who I just saw this morning. I'm still friends with. And it was really the one that I remember is the second one I did with him. Was it was called The Last Starfighter, which was the first sci-fi movie to use CGI, actually, to any extent. And you look back on it now, it looks like a cartoon, but it was still fun to do.
What was the first film you actually did the score for? Was it film or TV? Because I know you did The Simpsons.
No, I went straight into film. Most of my stuff has been feature film. I did a movie that never really saw the light of day, called, and the title alone will tell you, The Adventures of a Gnome Named Norm. and that... done by the dearly departed, directed by the dearly departed Stan Winston, the special effects and makeup king. I think that guy had more Oscars than anybody else. He designed and built the Predator, the Terminator, the real dinosaurs, the models in Jurassic Park, and, you know, figured out how to do all the articulations for these huge creatures. And he was a fantastic guy. That was my first shot. But nobody ever heard of it. The first film I did that anybody ever heard of was called Say Anything, which was a pretty big film in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of the only films that's still on Rotten Tomatoes with a 100.
Oh, really?
I think it has 100 ratings.
Okay, cool.
Look it up. Somebody call me in if I'm wrong.
No. Did you're working in a band with a guy who became a very well-known, successful composer named Danny Elfman.
Yeah.
In the days in the band, did some of what he was doing rub off on you? Do you think you influenced him? Was it just didn't happen?
I would never claim to have influenced Danny. I used to say, people would come to me and say, oh, you're an Oingo Boingo. I know Oingo Boingo. And I would hold up my hands right away and said, I take neither credit nor blame. So that Oingo Boingo was straight up Danny. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. It was his show. It was his band. Did he influence me? Yes, in many ways. Not necessarily just playing the music of Boingo, but in the other bands that he turned me on to. I came into Boingo. I was a jazz fusion player. I wanted to be Jan Hammer or Joe Zawinul, to name some exotic musicians. For those of you who don't know who they are, look them up. bands like Weather Report and Mahavishnu Orchestra. That was my raison d'etre as a musician. I wanted to do that. And what attracted me to Boingo was that they were doing really similarly high-energy music to what this jazz fusion stuff was, but in this other realm,
yes,
in a completely different style with different hair and everything. As you just heard on that, You Really Got Me. Whether you like it or not, you have to acknowledge that was not easy to play.
Yeah.
And that required some technical chops. That's what attracted me to the band. And being within the band, the influences that you were bringing up, Mike, were, you know, Danny turned me on to, we would sit down and he'd just play records for me and listen to him. Said, check out this sound, check out this XTC and The Police and Devo. Mm-hmm. You know, I had seen Devo on Saturday Night Live, I think, but I hadn't been particularly interested in that genre because, generally speaking, it did not call for musicianship. I wanted to hear people that had extreme musical chops. And within Boingo, I found a new way to express that, and that was really fun.
That was interesting because Danny, not to have a conversation about him, but once after you left the band and got some notoriety, Rolling Stone was running a thing on various people and their top 10 favorite records.
Yeah,
and they didn't print Danny's because all 10 of them were classical records.
Hmm.
He didn't put in Devo or anything. He sent me 10 classical records, and Rolling Stone wouldn't print it.
Oh, wow. That's too bad. Well, Danny had very eclectic taste, which was clearly evinced in Boingo. I mean, we'd be just as likely to be playing Balinese gamelan music as rock and roll as a
he
reference.
He had around the rehearsal room was lined with
Gamelies.
No, not Gamelies.
Gamelies Balinon. There's a really funny story about gamelan. That's something else for your listeners to look up. Gamelan. Gamelan. It's the name of the orchestra that is played in Bali and Java and other parts of Indonesia. And the Balinese gamelan is a bunch of instruments that make up the gamelan. And it's a fantastically Martian style of music and Martian instruments. Everything about it is different. The scales are different. The way it's played is different. Everything about it. Look up, just go on YouTube and just look what happens when you put in gamelan. But I had I love this story. Do you remember when we were hired, Mike? You must have arranged this to play, be the background, the backup band for a Japanese artist named Mayo Shono.
Yes, I remember that.
Yes?
Yes, I did arrange that.
Yes. So we played half of the record, and Billy and the Beaters played the other
half. That's right. Okay? And with her singing.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it was Mayo Shono, somebody in their handler said, we want some of that American sound. And Mike worked this out so that Boingo played half, and this other band, Billy and the Beaters, played the other half. So we're in the studio, and I'm in the control room with the producers, these Japanese producers. There must have been 12 of them lined up against the back wall, and there was always one designated guy who spoke English. And the rest would go, oh, yeah. You know, and they're talking, and I don't know what they're saying, you know, lost in translation. Mm-hmm. And Danny and I think Carrie were out in the...
Carrie's a bass player at the time.
Yes, but he also played mallets. His father was a really good mallet player.
That's right.
So Carrie could play mallets quite well. Mallets, in this case, applied to gamelan because it's a mallet instrument. So they're out there playing the gamelan instruments. Steve and I are in the control room, and we're acting as interpreters for the interpreter to talk to Danny and Carrie and say, you know, faster, slower, whatever it was. And the producer, this Japanese producer, now Danny also had a fascination with Japanese anime and Japanese kids shows like Mothra, all these Japanese creature shows that were just so funny, these really cheesy things. Godzilla was the top of that, you know, pantheon, but there were a bunch of others, and there was Mothra, there was one, a flying, I don't remember what he was, some kind of flying something. I think it was a turtle called Gamera. Gamera, right? So, and you know, the Japanese thing about R's and L's. And the guy in the producer turns, listening to Danny and Steve play this gamelan part, which was really intricate and very beautiful. And he says, ah, Steve-san, what is this instrument? And Steve says, that's a gamelan. Ah. And he pushes, the Japanese guy pushed the talkback button so Danny and Carrie could hear him and said, Danny-san, I love Gamera. And Danny thought he was talking about Gamera, the flying turtle. And Danny goes, I love Gamera too. And they went in this whole conversation where one's talking about the musical instrument and the other one's talking about the flying turtle. And Steve and I are in the control room just laughing our asses off because we couldn't interrupt either one of them because it was just too fun.
Gosh, anyway. Where are the cameras when you need them, huh? They would be great.
I wasn't there for
right
that
now.
One.
Well, reality show.
Well, enough of this Boingo crap.
Yeah.
Okay,
heck with them.
We have two songs that we need to play, okay? And I'm not sure that this is the time right now. Well, what do you think, Mike, the Purple Mountain?
It is a bit of a non sequitur.
But you will be back.
We'll jump from Boingo to this, but we'll give it a little jump. Introduction okay. in that as producer, Richard has worked with a band from Orange County, I think it is?
Yes, Huntington Beach area.
They're called Purple Mountains Majesties. And I want to, before you actually hear the music, okay. I just wonder why it took 4 years to produce this band.
Well, because they're broker than a broken bottle on the side of the road. These guys have no money at all, and it's a bit of a commute just to come up to work in the studio. They went through some personnel changes in the band in the meantime. My studio was booked a lot. It's just taken a long time just because of that. You know, the financial struggles of that. Mm. We've had no financial backing. I'm providing them with studio time and my expertise and engineers and all that. But beyond that, they don't get living expenses.
Yeah.
And they don't, you know,
they're
barely in peanut
and
butter.
And it's like, how many? About 8 people in a band?
No, 6. It feels like 8 because the 4 front guys, and I say front guys, is bass and drums, and then the other 4 guys play every instrument they can lay their hands on. Mm-hmm. So they'll switch up from song to song, from mandolin to acoustic guitar to ukulele to recorder to melodica to trumpet to flute to percussion. And all 4 of them switch all these instruments all the time. So when you watch them live, it really does feel like they're 8 guys.
Mm-hmm. Ha!
Okay, well, I fell for that one.
We have some phone call. I don't know. Maybe I'll pick up. Maybe it's for us. Okay, let's see. Hello. Hello. They disappear. Oh, maybe
we scared them off.
Yeah, we scared them off. Is it a good time to play the song?
Let's listen to Purple Mountains Majesties, which is a band that Richard's been producing and working with.
Four years.
It's done now. It's finished.
Whole album?
And we're...
How many tracks?
We've actually finished 12, could be 13 tracks, depending on how you count it. 12 tracks plus a cover for fun. But we're going to play. These are the very first 2 tracks that we did together.
Still somebody's calling. I will see. Maybe it's really somebody important. Hello?
Oh.
Hello? Is this XN?
Yes.
I'm just calling in to say hello to Mike and congratulate his guest.
Wonderful. Who we are talking to?
Hello?
Greg, is this Greg?
This is Greg.
He needs to turn off his radio.
We have feedback, yes, if you can take us off the...
Turn off your speakers, Greg.
Congratulate his guest. Just a second. I'll just pause this here.
There you go.
Hello.
There we go.
There we are. I'm sorry about that.
You hear that Canadian accent? He's calling... Where are you calling from? Fredericton.
Fredericton, New Brunswick, and
you picked that out.
Doing some wait,
Mike picked that out. What town you're from? Just on your accent?
I know him.
Oh,
wait, we need to know who we are talking to. You two guys seems like 3 of you know each other very well.
I don't know.
Okay, we don't know this. Who are you?
My name is Greg Gilbert. I do a show in Fredericton, New Brunswick called Python's Paradise.
I met
Mike 2 years. Well, didn't meet him physically, but I interviewed the lovely, beautiful Lisa Langlois 2 years ago, and she introduced me to Mike. And because of Lisa, I met Mike, and through Mike, I've met all kinds of these awesome people he sent me, including Johnny Vados Hernandez from Michael Blanco.
Oh, Johnny Vados.
Johnny Vatos.
Yeah.
Vato.
What's that?
Johnny Vato.
That's his name.
Yes. Vato. I'm sorry.
Anyway, it all works.
The blue mohawk.
Depends on what year. Yeah.
it's a mohawk. You just don't know what color it's going to be.
Yeah.
That's so sweet. Do you have a question for us? Or this was just beautiful. Hi to everybody, which we really appreciate your phone call.
Oh, I just thought I would show my support and say hello to Mike and congratulate him on his show. And it's the first time I've called in. And thank him for all the guests. And, of course, I started talking to Lisa this weekend. She just and I said to her, I said, thank you for introducing me to Mike. You know, so it's like a ripple effect.
That's love.
Okay. Who's our guest today?
Thank you so, so much for calling. And we'll come back maybe one day and we'll be talking to you exclusively. That would be great.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You take care, Mike. Enjoy that California weather.
I will. Thank you, man.
Wonderful. Hey, whole world listens to us. That's great.
So speaking of California weather,
back to
Purple Mountains, Majesties, and Huntington Beach. So these guys are the quintessential Southern California band.
Sound.
And you'll hear for yourself, but they're very... I was attracted to their music right away. The first time I saw them, I was turned on to them by my daughter and my wife, who had seen them playing in the back room of a restaurant down in Orange County.
Wow, that's the story that we want to hear about.
I haven't given you the good part. The good part is...
Richard, where are you eating? I'll be sending all musicians there.
This is a restaurant called Owl Lock, A-U-L-A-C. I'm proud to promote it.
Okay.
It is a vegan restaurant, vegan Vietnamese food.
Yeah.
And the chef, the head chef, is a gentleman named Chef Ito, I-T-O. Okay. Chef Ito is famous in the raw food world for his concoctions because they're amazing. He's an amazing chef. And he's also notorious for the fact that he took a vow of silence about, I think it's 18 years ago now. He hasn't spoken a word since.
Aww.
Now, imagine...
We can invite him to our show.
Trust me, I wanted to get him on a radio show,
show. We'll talk for him.
That's right. Yes.
I think we'll see his face effect. Yeah, we could do it.
Yes.
We will taste food and we'll say, good.
His food is amazing.
Crunchy, good.
But that's and power.
Very
that's power.
Okay, that's where you heard the band,
18
yes?
18 years not talking.
Yeah. Oh, he's an amazing human. And you love him immediately.
Aww.
That's the funny thing. You just meet him and somehow you communicate. He knows how to communicate through gestures, through kind of pigeon sign language, and gets you to understand what he wants. He gets you to say what he wants.
This crazy? Because I just laid a vocal on the top of the scene for the movie that is silent movie. 2017 silent movie was made for 10 years, and it's got no one word except, you know, sounds of streets or something. Whole story is silent, and we'll see how far this movie will go. But having gentleman who is doing this for 18 years,
I imagine running a kitchen, actually two kitchens. They've opened a new restaurant in downtown LA that's right behind Disney Hall, and it's called Owl Lock DTLA. Anyway, he was kind of Purple Mountains Majesty's de facto manager. He had taken them under his wing and was helping them out because he fell in love with the music. My daughter heard them there, came back home and said, "Dad, you have to produce this band. They're amazing. I know that you would like their music." And I said, "Last thing in the world I want to do is work for free.
Yeah.
I'm a mercenary. That's just who I am." But she, you know, twisted my arm, and my wife and I went down to hear them play. And three songs, you said I could curse, right?
Yeah.
Three songs into the set, I was sitting next to Caitlin, our daughter, and I turned to her and said,
Fuck
you, right?
Great.
We got to produce these guys.
Oh.
And so I went up to them and started talking to them after. They didn't know who I was, which was great. We could just talk. And I said, "If you want to come up, let's record a couple songs and see if we hit it off.
Yes.
And if you don't like what I do or whatever, for any reason whatsoever, the recording session is my gift to you guys. You can take the masters and go wherever you want with them." But, of course, that's not what happened. We enjoyed working together and have been developing it ever since. When you listen to the song, which one do you have queued up?
I have Walking, I have Young, Fair, and True.
Let's start with Young, Fair, and True.
Okay, cool.
And this is more on their poppy side. But the listener, check out what attracted me to the band was their very unusual sense of song structure. So it's everything is immediately accessible. Their melodies are very easy to whistle, to hum along. The lyrics are positive and fun, and it just emanates Southern California. But the song structure, it kind of reminds me of what Brian Wilson was. If Brian Wilson was 28 today, I think this is what he would be doing. All the 3 and 4 part harmonies and the fact that a song would suddenly just take a left turn on you and another instrument comes in you didn't know was going to be there. That's what these guys are about.
I cannot wait to listen. 12, 13 songs. I cannot wait. Maybe they can come to our studio. We'll be playing and talking to them. Okay, Purple Mountain Majesty, Young, Fair, and True.
Met met you in the land of milk and honey, in an orchard where I drank from its juice. All along its yield was fruitful and youth young, fair, playful and true. Young, fair and true. We had to sing about the truth. Love's the only one, the one and only one emotion of the ceremony. It's the earth, the sky, the woman and man, the matrimony of two souls who long to understand. Understand each other. Who need to understand?
That note at the end?
That was me.
That was you.
That was the only note I played.
I really think you have golden egg in your hands.
Isn't that amazing?
It's so much of throwback and a futuristic and party going on and really nice 70s sounding lyrics and, you know, just with some deeper meanings, but still is light, but is melancholic also. This, when it comes to trumpets and harmonies, it's just amazing.
Oh, I'm going to have you write all their ad copy now.
you know what I'm saying? As a listener, and I love music, of course, and just lots of going on in the song, but still sounds like so easy on the ear. They really are switching from the...
Oh, that makes me want to hear another one. Can we play another one?
Absolutely.
All right, now this one's going to be a left turn from the one you just heard. Young, Fair and True. This is showing a little bit more of their kind of jam band roots. And this is, it's a song called Walking.
Well, let's walk with them.
Of a man so blue, look
bright as the red of a rose in bloom. Caught the scent of flow from a woman's perfume. All in the course of an afternoon, fishermen were killing what they caught on the docks. Lovers embracing with their lips locked. Been walking all year. I feel my concentration has run thin because I'm only walking where I've been. Out from the house into the car, out from the car into the work, out from the work back to the home. Too tired to sleep, I dream alone.
We have plenty more. Speaking about them, the whole collection, it's kind of a masterpiece. It's like they started out with Sgt. Pepper's, you know.
It is. It's a beautiful
mixture of
But what's
going to
happen now in this music industry that we've got going now? There used to be a path you'd now go down, and now what the hell do you?
Yeah, we'd call up Mike Gormley, and he'd make it all happen for us. And it's not so easy anymore.
Of course,
it's easier and it's harder at the same time. It's a different way to go, and we're exploring a lot of different things. That said, if Lenny Warnker wants to call me up right now and sign them to Warner Brothers and give them a nice, healthy advance and do the old school method, I'm down.
Right. Still the best method, I think.
Well, it depends.
Wait. Now, you got guys coming to your studio.
Yeah.
Not just guys. You got this lady named Barbara Streisand.
Right.
But you two record there, Coldplay, Pink, Sting.
Yep.
How come the kind of camaraderie not happen anymore where they might say, I love this band, and I don't mean to put pressure on them? But
No. I absolutely get that. I am very cognizant of people's desire for privacy when they're in the studio. And most of the people that come in my studio don't know what I do. And that's by design. Mm. And if you look at the studio's website, and anybody listening could go check it out, it's called Woodshed Recording, is actually the name of the studio, woodshedrecording.com. If you put that in and you look up, and the website was beautifully designed by our daughter, Caitlin, by the way, with help from Linda, it's you can pour through every page of that website and see everything on there, and my name is not on there once, and it's by design. I want people to come because they want to come to that studio.
Private and have.
Yeah, it's very private. It's very exclusive, overlooking the ocean in Malibu. And so I don't impose myself on any of the people that come in there.
So you wouldn't say, hey, Sting, you want to hear some good music?
No.
Well, I understand that. I'm not, you know.
Okay, Mike, but you can do it.
No, and I wouldn't, because...
You need a mic. You need people like Mike, and you need people who listen, people who fall in love with this band, because the sound is really amazing.
It's not... Yes, thank you for that, and I agree. But it's not that. It's just that, you know, maybe I'm being too sympathetic, but as an artist myself and as a musician, if I go in the recording studio, I'm in there to realize my creative vision, and I don't want to be distracted by somebody else's. And I respect that when people come in the studio. I just don't. If they come to me and say, hey, what are you working on, Richard? That's great. Check this
out.
And I have done that here and there, but by and large, no. Most guys that come in there don't even know. They think I'm just a guy that owns a studio.
Wow.
I had my favorite version of that was we had Lenny Kravitz in one night. And he comes in, and his engineer preceded him, was there. And you'll like this, Mike. He comes in and... his engineer was there first, and so I gave his engineer a tour of the studio. It's an unusual studio, as you two know, but listeners don't. But all the interior walls move, and the whole studio morphs depending on what you're doing. So I was showing this to Lenny's engineer, and he's like, oh, wow. And he knew he had done his research, knew about me and my background and so on. And I'm showing them around and then getting ready to walk out of the studio, and Lenny shows up. And he walks down the walkway down to the studio, and it's 9 o'clock at night now. And Lenny showed up, and he's in full Lenny Kravitz mode. He is wearing sunglasses. 9 o'clock at night. Come on, dude. What? And you know, and a scarf and like a leather jacket, I think, or a jean jacket. And he just had that rock star vibe. It's just kind of oozing off of him, and very quiet, and kind of looking down his nose at everything around him, just like, yeah, let's get to work kind of vibe. And so I said, hey, Lenny, my name's Richard. Would you like me to give you the 10-cent tour of the studio before you get started? But, yeah, sure. So I showed him around, and he was kind of feigning interest, and it was fine. Everything was great. So a very short tour for him. I said, okay, great. You're in good hands here. I'm going to go back up to the house. Have fun. And I walk back. As I'm starting to leave the studio, his engineer leans over to Lenny and whispers in his ear. And Lenny whipped around, whipped off his sunglasses, and says, Richard?
Oh.
And I said, yeah. He goes, Richard Gibbs from Boingo Boingo?
Oh.
And I go, yeah. He goes, you have no idea, man. And he turned into this whole different human being right in front of me. And I saw, that's when I met Lenny Kravitz.
Real
that's
Lenny.
And I found that I've had
that's
that experience
story.
Over and over. Most people have this, you know, the artist,
cover up.
They tend to put up armor, and they have a persona and what they put up out front. But who they are behind the scenes, I'm going to spill a little secret for everybody here right now.
Uh-oh.
Everybody listening, you ready for this?
Yes.
All musicians, no matter how cool they are, especially the cool ones, are complete, total nerds and geeks. All of them. You scratch the surface and that's
absolutely
what you get. And if you think about it's because if they're good at what they do, and most of the stars are there for a reason, they studied this. They probably played clarinet in the junior high band. And they all really practiced their instruments
for
hours
and hours.
What did
you play in junior
high? Trombone.
Trombone, I think.
So they all really learned their instruments, and they all really learned their craft. And when they do that, they have to be alone in a room by themselves. While the football players are out getting girls, while the basketball players are out having fun and partying, the musicians are practicing their craft, honing their craft year in and year out as teenagers when everybody else is having fun. So
Richard,
they are geeks and nerds, I'm telling you.
We love talented people, and you met so many of them. I am so sad because the 50 minutes went like 1 second with you, and I'm hoping you will be back to talk to us a little bit more. I think you give us insight to the world that everybody wants to know a little bit more about, but you are very, very good storyteller. That's...
I aspire to be a raconteur, yes.
And then, I love that. Even you need to write the book, and I'm sure you are doing that. But today we need to say bye-bye to you.
Yes.
Okay, then we had a great time to listening and talking to Richard Gibbs and Mike Gormley.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for bringing Richard to us. And I'm hoping that Pure Mountain Majesty.
Purple Mountains. Majesties.
See, that's my accent, but thank you for clearing up. They will be here with us, but we had the honor to really make premieres, two songs, yes?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes, 80s is fine. We have enough of choice
I do have to plug one quick thing. That first song, Young, Fair, and True, is on Spotify
now. It's already?
It's on Spotify, so everybody put it on their playlist. Young, Fair, and True by Purple Mountains Majesties.
Wonderful. And thank you for today, and hopefully you will come.
Certainly.
Come back, will you?
I would be happy to.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for today, Ilona Europa, accent on LA Talk Radio every Monday, 6 till 7 p.m. Pacific time. Ah, what a show.
Bye.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Accent On with Ilona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.